This is the BTP Media Network. Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Beyond the Pitch. I'm Juan Arango. Thank you very much for joining us here on the show. We're going to have a bit of a change of pace now. And, of course, before I begin, congratulations to all Real Madrid fans. And congratulations to European football fans in general. It was a tremendous season in various big leagues. And lots of excitement that the teams offered. So hopefully 2017-2018 does offer the same, and we'll look forward to it. Now what we do is shift over to what ends up being summer football. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Well, it depends. It's all depending on the eye of the beholder, I guess you could say. But for the most part, we start looking and previewing here on 101 the Confederations Cup. It's coming up in the next couple of weeks over in Russia. Many look at it as a test for many of the sites. Many look at it as a test for many of the teams as well, leading up to the World Cup that will be held in Russia as well in 2018. So a lot of questions will be asked, a lot of answers will be sought after, and I guess we wanted to beat everybody to the punch. So we'll have a lot of pundits, a lot of players, former players, and a lot of individuals involved with the respective teams coming on to talk about what is going on and what is being thought of in this tournament for each and every one of the 8 participating teams. Now, that being said, each one has their different expectations. For example, you have teams that are looking at this as a means to look at new players and be able to rest some. Case in point, Germany. You also start looking at some that want to really assert themselves as one of the top teams going into Russia. Case in point, Chile. Maybe Portugal can be looked at in that particular aspect as well after winning the Euros just last year. So they want to solidify their spot amongst the contenders. And we'll see how that happens or how that works out. But also some that have a bit of a bone to pick as far as Mexico's concerned, a team that will be looking to surprise many and kind of nestle themselves, kind of insert themselves amongst the contenders for a quarterfinal spot, that famous quinto partido that they've been looking for several years. And that'll be interesting to see how that works out with El Tri and Juan Carlos Osorio. Today, it'll be Australia's turn. The Socceroos currently find themselves in the midst of a World Cup qualifying battle. And really, it's a very reserved future as far as the Socceroos are concerned. It's year 3 of Ange Postecoglou's tenure with the Socceroos. And today, to talk about what's going on with the Socceroos, but also with Australian football in general, will be a good friend of the show, a good friend of Beyond the Pitch, none other than former Manchester United and also Aston Villa goalkeeper Mark Bosnich. Of course, he's a pundit over at Fox Sports Australia, the good friends, at least on my end, that I've happened to work for back in the World Cup back in 2014. Good people there, Murray Shaw, as well as the rest of the gang. Well, they've all been very good people, and I've really had a pleasure to work with them, as I mentioned before. Mark, well, he's the type of guy that really doesn't hold back, and you'll honestly start to see what he says and what he's able to give you as far as an opinion is concerned. He's not going to pull any punches. He's a guy that's going to tell you things like they are. And, well, you know what? Let me stop talking and let me let Mark Bosnich say what he has to say. Here's Mark Bosnich on 101. So I'm here with Mark Bosnich, pundit extraordinaire from Fox Sports Australia. Mark, man, thank you so much for joining us here on 101. It's a pleasure. And, you know, right now I really envy you because of where you're traveling, because you're going to, well, you're going Melbourne, you're going Adelaide, you're going Sochi.
Yeah, very, very lucky. And thank you for having me on the show, Juan. I'm looking forward to it. It is a lot of travel, but really looking forward to it. And let's hope that for Australia's sake, anyway, the results are going to make it a trip worthwhile.
Yeah, Mark, look, I wanted to ask you right now, how are the Australian fans, how are the press, how are they handling what's going on with the Socceroos right now? They're right now in the playoff spot for World Cup playoffs. I mean, it hasn't been the smoothest of sailing for the Socceroos per se, but they always find a way to find an answer to get something done and come very close to accomplishing their goal.
Well, they have done in the past, but if I was to sum up the mood, I would say very cautious. We obviously had a little bit of a tumultuous time right before the last World Cup when we had to change our manager, and Ange Postecoglou came in and did very well for young side, although we lost the whole three games in the World Cup. But a lot of people were enthused, if you like, by the way that the team played. And then 2015, winning the Asian Cup at home, and people were very, very happy. But this World Cup campaign has started with a bang, but it's it really, in this second phase, has begun to stutter. And a lot of people are beginning to get a little bit nervous, especially in terms of Thursday night when we play against Saudi Arabia in Adelaide. Saudi Arabia, of course, are on 16 points along with Japan and really only need a draw here. And that would make it very difficult for us to go through on one of the two automatic places. It would mean a playoff if we come third with the third team from the other Asian group, which will probably be South Korea or Uzbekistan, and then playing the fourth team from CONCACAF, which will either be Mexico, USA, Panama, Trinidad, Tobago, or Honduras. So it won't be an easy route if we have to go that way. And there are a lot of people think if we go through the playoffs that it's going to be very, very difficult to qualify. So I would sum up the mood by saying very, very cautious indeed.
It's interesting you say that. I mean, what has gone wrong? I mean, is it that the team kind of rested in their laurels? Is it because of what's happened domestically, although most of the players that Ange Postecoglou has called up, a good portion of them play abroad. So I mean, that really it ends up not being part of the argument as well.
Yeah, I think it's been a bit of a mixture of quite a few things. The fact that what you just said about resting on our laurels, I think that's true. I think sometimes, you know, in the first phase of qualifying, it was so easy, and I think sometimes people can get lulled into a false sense of security, and I think that's what happened. And we started the second phase of qualifying very well as well, you know, with a couple of really good victories. But since then, it really has begun to fade away. We have players like Aaron Moy, who's had a fantastic season with Huddersfield Town, who've just been promoted to the EPL. Tommy Rogic has won the treble with Celtic. Tommy Juric has been scoring a lot of goals in Switzerland. But there's been other players who've been in and out of their sides, and that's always a problem for our national team and the national coach, whether to pick those players who are in and out of their sides in Europe or to go with the home-based one. I think as well there have been other problems which haven't been really reported and probably what you guys won't really know about. There was a bit of a standoff during one of the camps early on with the players' union and the federation, and then the federation sort of slapped down the coach a little bit publicly, and there was a few rumblings from that as well. But if you look at, you know, some of the results that we've had recently, I just think we've lost our way a little bit. You know, Ange Postecoglou, like I said, has always been adamant that he'd play a certain way, and that was always going to be 4-3-3. And we used to ask him, you know, do you have a plan B? And it was always, yeah, to do plan A better. Then all of a sudden, you know, last qualifying game, the one before the last qualifying game away to Iraq, which we had to play in Tehran, he played a 3-4-3 and they drew, and they were quite fortunate, and the team and himself come under a lot of criticism. So there's been a little bit of angst between the media and the public and the team, which hasn't happened before, because, you know, they were sort of, you know, everyone was so happy that a young team had sort of come through and finally sort of lifted themselves above the shadow of the golden generation, so to speak. So I think it's a combination of all those things which has led us to this situation now. I still think that we'll win on Thursday, but there's still no guarantee of being in those automatic qualifying places, because we've got to play Japan away and Thailand at home. You'd think that we'd get 3 points on the Thailand game, but Japan away is going to be very, very difficult.
Everything you say makes so much sense as well. I mean, I remember that. I remember seeing you on television after, I think it was after the Oman match. And of course, that was during the last World Cup qualifying cycle, and you saw some of that necessary, right? It was a major necessity to start changing generations right there, and I think that was the biggest thing that Ange Postecoglou was able to do prior to the World Cup. But this generation, I mean, you start to see, you know, I mean, you mentioned players like Rogic, you mentioned Aaron Moy. I mean, also one of the names that many are going to keep a close eye on, of course, is Adrian Rustich from Groningen, because he was part of the Olaroos camp. He was, you know, he's been one of those players that Ange has really wanted on the team for a while.
Yeah, he has. It was rumored that Bosnia and Herzegovina wanted to take him so they could make sure that, you know, he only could play for Bosnia. So Ange has got in and called him into the squad this time around. But it's always good seeing young blood coming into the squads. Whether or not he'll have a big role to play on Thursday, I think, is another question. But like I said, I think it's still, you know, looking at him, Hristich and a few others, there's still a bit of a deflection, a little bit, the fact that with three games to go, we're 3 points off the pace. And after the way we started, it's not an ideal situation to be in. The way that we started this second phase of qualifying, it was like we're going to qualify pretty much by now. And it's a little bit too close for comfort. Because like I said, you know, Saudi Arabia, all they need is a draw. Then they've got to play United Arab Emirates away, who are already out of the competitions, which they'll think they should get 3 points. And then they have got Japan at home. By that time, you would have thought that Japan would have qualified. So this is really like a grand final. And there will be hell to pay here. You talk about the press and the public if they don't qualify automatically. And then the pressure will really be on. Like I said, I to play Uzbekistan or South Korea is never an easy job anyway. But even to go through that, to play the fourth team from CONCACAF is going to be very, very difficult. So, look, Ange Postecoglou is the type of manager who likes that type of pressure. But I'm sure, you know, if we could enter his head now when he's over in Adelaide sleeping, he'll be wanting to win and to qualify automatically to make sure that like I said, we're not going to have any last minute hiccups.
That's part of the challenge of being with the soccer is because of how Asia, and mind you, Asia, at least from my perspective, seems like such a tough region to get out of because of the travel, because of the logistics, but also because it seems tricky because the upper echelon has a bit of a difference compared to the lower. And yeah, there is a sense of a comfort zone there.
There is, and there has been for quite some time. But what I've found is I've been back here in Australia. I've come back to Australia in 2008. And that was like 2 years after the Golden Generation done so well at the World Cup. But the year before, when they played in their first Asian Cup, they were knocked out the quarterfinals. And a lot of people were saying then when I came back, you know, there's a few signs that, you know, the team needs sort of rebuilding and rejuvenating. But that took a little bit longer than it should have done. And I think we're seeing two things here right now. We're paying for that a little bit, that a lot of these players didn't have the experience that they should have done earlier. And the second thing, you have to give a great compliment to the other teams in Asia who have basically come up. And what I mean come up is, when we started, a lot of people were fearful of Australia. We're a very strong nation and a lot of players playing, you know, all around the world in the most prominent leagues, the EPL and Serie A, and a couple are in La Liga as well. That's no more. We have two players that are playing at EPL level, and they're both at Bournemouth and they're not starting. We don't have anyone playing at Serie A. We have Trent Sainsbury, who has Inter Milan, but he's not a regular starter, who's on loan from a club in China. A lot of players are applying their trade all around the world and getting good money, and good luck to them for doing it. But we haven't got that depth of players that were playing at the best, you know, in the best leagues. And the other thing as well, like I said to you, just to touch on that, the likes of Thailand and, you know, the likes of United Arab Emirates, so all these other teams that when I first came back in 2008, I thought were quite weak, they've become stronger. And Japan, South Korea, are always very, very difficult. They're always up there. I mean, our record against Japan isn't the best anyway. And a lot of these teams have become stronger, where we're, in my opinion, stagnated a little bit. And that's going to be something that we're going to have to deal with, you know, very, very soon, because not only are these teams, like I said, becoming stronger and beginning to level themselves out with us, but as we saw in the Asian Champions League and the club competition this year, some of these countries are beginning to overtake us, which is a worrying trend.
I'm with Mark Bosnich here on One-on-One here on Beyond the Pitch. Mark, does a lot of this also have to do with how the A-League is performing as well? I mean, there's been a great deal of criticism towards the A-League, especially after a lot of the teams got pretty much eliminated early on in the Asian Champions League. And you were amongst one of the biggest critics of the performances of those teams in that particular competition. Does that also have an impact with what's going on with Australian football?
I think it does. I think it has a very big impact. I mean, we won, when I say we, Western Sydney Wanderers were the first Australian team to win back in 2015, I think it was, or 2014, the Asian Champions League. It was a wonderful achievement. And as I keep saying to everybody over here, you know, it's not just international football. It's, you know, when our clubs go on the international stage, i.e. the Asian Champions League, that also represents Australian football as well. And the last couple seasons really haven't been good enough. And this season was a disaster. Not one team progressed past the first round. And we had one night where one of our sides lost 6-0 and the other one lost 5-1. Now, obviously, with the explosion in Chinese football, it's made it impossible for us to compete wages-wise. But there are other ways that we can compete, and we're not utilising those other ways to their full potential. We still only have 10 teams. They play each other 3 times. There's no promotion or relegation. There's no transfer fees domestically. And there is still a salary cap, and it's hurting our teams. A lot of managers you speak to over here in the A-League are sort of very reluctant, you know, when they do well, that the following season when they play in the Champions League, they realise that they're going to be hamstrung by the fact, yes, there is a lot of travel, but that's the same for both teams. But the more important thing is the fact that a lot of these teams, because of the salary cap, get punished for being successful domestically. So we had Sydney FC this season go through the season pretty much undefeated. They lost one regular game during the regular season and ended up winning the playoffs as well. So a fantastic season. But already they've had to shed some of the players that played a part in that. And that's going to weaken them when it comes to playing in the Asian Champions League. And that is just completely wrong. Now, like I said, yes, we can't go and get a Hulk or we can't go get an Oscar, but we could go get some very good players and to improve these squads. But they find themselves being, you know, outside the salary cap, which is ridiculous. Like I said, if they really want the sport to progress, all those things have to come to the fore. And as well, like I said, promotion relegation has to happen sooner rather than later. You've got to include everybody, because what's happening is we have a top 6 in our playoffs out of 10 teams, but for the teams that can't make that top 6, the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season, they pretty much switch off. You need to have them, you know, it takes iron to sharpen iron. You need to have them switched on for the whole season. It just improves the whole depth of the whole league.
I'm sure you're an Australian and the United States, because I hear a lot of the arguments that you're making very similar to some of the discussions that are going on here in the United States as far as promotion relegation, as far as a salary cap, as far as being hamstrung when it comes to international competition and teams not being able to have the depth to be able to play on.
Yeah, correct. And I follow it on social media. I can completely understand our American cousins when they're saying these things, because it's very, very similar on a smaller scale over here. And what my argument is, especially with the salary cap, is, I've just told you, it's not so much we won't be able to go and buy the likes of, like I said to you, say Diego Costa. But what we'll be able to get is, you know, to get somebody like we've had. There's a chap who came from Albania called Besar Berisha. He's been an absolute phenomenon down here. He was playing in the Bundesliga, but he wasn't getting a regular game. But he's been a phenomenon down here. Now, we'd be able to get 2 or 3 of those type of players and have them in the squad, or even have better local players here in the squad, but you can't because of the salary cap. And then that translates onto the international stage. And then, you know, we have the embarrassing situation, like I said, that night, you know, where we conceded 11 goals and scored 1. And you're thinking to yourself, this is ridiculous, you know. It doesn't shine a good light on Australian football. And you know, I think, you know, football fans worldwide, whether it be in America, Australia, or wherever it is, in Europe or whatever, are mature enough to know that, you know, over a regular season, if you're talking about first past the post, in generally every competition in the world, there only are 2 or 3 teams. You know, sometimes like in the Premier League, you might get a little bit more, but there are 2 or 3 teams who can come first. But we, as you do in America, we have the equaliser, and it's called the playoffs. So, you know, you could finish in our league, you could finish 30 points behind the top team over the regular season and finish 6th, but you can still go on and win the grand final. And that should be enough. And, you know, if you really want your national team and also the teams playing internationally to do well, you can't keep handicapping and punishing them for success. It goes against, really, you know, living in a society where you count yourself as a capitalist society that, you know, that you want to strive to do well. You know, it gets to the point where, like I said to you, there's a lot of managers who actually, you know, say to themselves, oh, well, you know, we've won the title this season, but next season with the Asian Champions League, you know what, you know, I'm going to have to pretty much concentrate on one of the two because of the travel and because I haven't got the squad, because I can't leave players here behind to be ready for the weekend. And for me, that just devalues the competition. And I think the sooner the administrators wake up to that, the better. We don't even have any relegation. So the argument for the salary cap for me is weak. It's they argue in terms of the fact that it was to save the teams from themselves. Well, what's the use of having a CFO or a CEO if you know, if you can't manage a budget? People understand, you know, if you haven't got the money, to be up in the top positions or give yourself a better chance of success. People understand that, but I think what people don't like is the fact that the competition sometimes seems a bit manufactured because of this salary cap.
I mean, you made some great points there as far as the excuse already being installed within teams, as far as the salary cap, as far as all the other structures in place when it comes to, you know, when it comes to the domestic tournament, at least, and kind of in some cases, depending on the team, they kind of prioritize the domestic league over the international play, which at times you can make the argument that it should be the opposite. Now, Mark, I mean, you start seeing that whole thing, but also at the grassroots level, is there some preoccupation also from a Socceroos perspective that you start seeing some of the younger teams, some of the Joeys, at least you see the under-17s, you see the under-20s failing to qualify for the respective World Cups. Is that also a major problem that Australia is facing looking at 2022 or 2026?
Fine, it's a massive problem. I can't underline enough how big a problem it is. During the 80s and 90s, when football here, or soccer, whatever you want to call it, was part-time, our Joeys, our under-17s and our young Socceroos, our under-20s, not only got to World Cup tournaments consistently, but, you know, got to quarterfinals, got to semifinals, and in one case got to the final. And that was on a regular basis. And, you know, we haven't qualified for the Olympics either since 2008 in London. You mentioned the 17s and 20s not qualifying. The youth football here right now is in a mess. It's just totally confused. We've had people come down here from Europe and install something which basically a curriculum which just does not suit the Australian athlete. And also we're going through this phase where we've got people in charge saying, you know, we're not going to get young kids, you know, playing for points. I believe that from age 12 onwards, there should be some type of pressure slowly but surely stepped up. So then when they get thrown into the lines then at these under-17s tournaments that they're used to dealing with some type of pressure. I understand under the age of 12, that's no problem. Unless it's somebody that's outstanding, you're playing a year or maybe 2 years above his age group, that's a different story. But from age 12 onwards, you need to have some type of competition. And we've got the situation here where, like I said, where people have, you know, started doing things, silly things really, going away from what made us really good at that age. And now Australia is a third-rate footballing nation. I mean that in the best possible way. We're ranked, you know, 49, 50 in the world, something like that. And for our young players to get noticed at that age by the big scouts in Europe, you know, they need to be at those tournaments, and we're not. And the fees that the kids are paying here are extortionate. I had a parent tweet me the other day on social media saying that he has two sons who are both part of the elite program, SAT they call them over here, who are paying $2,500 Australian dollars each year to be part of this program. I mean, that's just ridiculous. It's cheaper to play golf. And for me, they're not getting what they pay for. You know, if you go to a fast food outlet and you have indigestion afterwards, well, don't complain. But if you're going to a top restaurant and you're paying top money and you still get indigestion, then you've got to, you know, then you've got a right to complain. And that's what's happening down here. And this has happened systematically. I like I said, when I first came back in 2008, I was overjoyed to see football on TV, on satellite, professional teams, professional players. But the youth setup concerned me, and it's gone from a concern to actually outright. I'm really, really like worried. I can't tell you how worried I am because, like you said, coming up for these major tournaments and seeing what the rest of Asia are doing, it is really starting to frighten me. And, you know, and the facts don't lie in terms of the fact that we don't have any players playing in the top leagues. Aaron Moy will be playing hopefully in the Premier League next year, but that's just not enough. We used to have about, you know, between 10 and 20 players during the 90s and early 2000s playing in the top leagues, especially in the Premier League from here. And we're just falling behind. And like I said, I don't think the kids are falling behind too much in terms of the fact that they're as athletic as they used to be. But I think that they've been throughout the pathways and the guidance that they've been given is just completely wrong.
Made for the Australian athlete. What style of football would be made for the Australian athlete?
Fast, aggressive. We always had a wonderful reputation for our fitness, and that seems to have taken a backward step. Fast, aggressive, exciting to watch, And to play with, you know, there's a saying down here in Australia, we always have, you know, people say, go and have a go. And what that translates to is basically go and attack, go out on the front foot. We've become, like I said, a nation, from a nation that everyone looked upon as a nation that punched above our weight in all sports, Olympic Games and so forth. But especially in football, it used to be part-time up until 2005. That people used to be saying, you know, what are you doing? You know, what are you eating down there? You know, a superbly fit nation. Players now are not at the same fitness levels as teams from overseas, which I think is a big, big mistake. You know, they made the conscious effort to start, you know, to try to get ball players and this, and that's fine. But, you know, fitness in the modern game is paramount, always has been and always will be, but especially now in the modern game. And we're, like I said, we've just lost that. The aggression that we used to have, the competitiveness, and that stems from, like I said to you, when you know, when you got kids and all that, when you tell them that the result doesn't matter, you breed that, and that's what's been happening, and that's been across the board. So that type of culture, and that's what Ange Postecoglou did with the national team when he came back. He tried to put back that Australian culture in that served us so well. You can't get away from that. Okay, you are what you are, and that is the culture, and that's the culture that, like I said, not only we had success with in the past, but the people that are growing up here are accustomed to. And once you start tinkering with that, you are risking things happening, what they've been happening over the last five or 6 years, I would say, or more, whereby we've lost our way and basically been confused by the messages that are being sent out by the powers that be.
Again, Mark, I mean, everything you say, I kind of close my eyes and I just start, whenever you say Australia, I kind of just put, okay, fill in the blank. There's so many similarities, frightening similarities at times. I mean, frightening, you know, quote unquote frightening, between what's going on in Australia and what's been going on here in the United States as well, at the youth level, at the club level, and even at the national team level. So, I mean, it's just such parallels that you see that are pretty amazing because of God knows for what, but they just end up making the same decisions and going down the same path, I guess. And to me, it is.
You start thinking to yourself, you know, and well, I think it was Albert Einstein that said, if you keep, you know, the definition of being, you know, of being crazy, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and expect different results, then you are crazy. But for two countries, and especially your country, over 300 million people, I mean, we've got 25 million people here, but both countries who are great places to live, wonderful infrastructure, great facilities, and in the world's most popular sport still start falling short, you've got to start asking these questions. And there'll be players over there, players that I played against in the Premier League, I mean, I see Casey Keller sometimes on ESPN, people like that, they'll know that they've been over there. They realise the difference is not that great. But the difference is bigger than a lot of people think, but not as much as a lot of people think. And they're always clutching at straws and guessing. There are people who have been over there and know. And unfortunately, when these people come back to the United States, and I know definitely here in Australia, I think that the powers that be are either sidelining them or they're not listening. They're not listening properly. Or they want to listen, but they want to make sure it's their idea. So what I tell people over here is that I've had enough criticism and praise to last me two lifetimes. So I don't mind I don't care if you say it's your idea, it's not my idea, but just implement it, because we produce here as good athletes as any in the world at a young age, and somewhere between 12 and 20 they lose their way, and that's the question that needs to be asked, to say, why is that happening? Well, we know why it's happening, because of the way that they're being trained, and until that stops and until that changes and goes along the right path, you're going to continue to see exactly the same results.
Well, you're one of my favorite people. I mean, sometimes, you know, I'm especially because of the time difference, having to stay up until maybe 2-3 o'clock in the morning and hear what you have to say. Like I said, you pull no punches, and that's what I really enjoy about listening to what you say about football. Because I mean, you really offer a great deal of knowledge and a great deal of honesty, more than anything else, which is very needed now.
Thank you very much, Juan. And look, you know, when I first came back here to Fox, that's all they told me. They said, look, just be honest and just ask questions. So I feel as though, like I said, I'm duty-bound to the people here, because it's the most popular sport. The Australian Bureau of Statistics released their statistics the other day, the government-run statistic bureau, to say Australian football is by far the most popular sport. There's over a million registered players playing competitive football in this country, and that's not including the ones who are playing over 35s and so forth. So when you put it in that context, and then you look at, say, a country like Uruguay, who's just got over 3 million people, and they've won two World Cups and continue to produce world-class players, over and over again, and are continually in big tournaments, and you think to yourself, why? You know, Uruguay as a country, no disrespect to it, but it's not in the same league as in terms of Australia or definitely United States in terms of the wealth of the nation. But look what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, I can understand it more when you talk about, say, Brazil with a massive population. But when you're looking at countries like that, you start to wonder and you start to think to yourself, well, hang on a minute. Well, what is happening? Because, you know, it's like we've got everything here, but the thing that we most want is elusive. But like I said to you, it's closer than people think, but further away than people think because of the way that they're approaching things and the way that they're going about things. It can happen. It can happen with a lot of hard work and due diligence and perseverance. But people who are in power have got to let it happen. They can't micromanage everything.
Mark, again, I want to thank you so much for being on. I could talk to you, I don't know, for days probably. And, it was great to have you on. I really enjoy what you do. I really enjoy your work. I might as well just tell you now, don't think I'm kissing your ass because you're on the air. I really enjoy what you've been able to offer both on the pitch as well as off of it. And thanks so much for joining us. Now, Mark, for the people here in this part of the world, in the United States, where can we follow you? Where can we really keep up with what you're doing with Fox and with other projects you're
Fox
doing?
Sports Australia. But my Twitter handle is at the Real Bozza. There you go. So that's I suppose where you can best follow me. I don't really know what else. I mean, I'm not really that great with technology, but I am on Twitter. I'm at the Real Bozza, and I'm Fox Sports Australia. So that's pretty much it.
Again, thank you so much, Mark. Hey, you know what? Send my regards over to Murray and to Adam Peacock, man. I mean, Adam.
I will.
I had a great time with Adam over in Rio. We had coffee. Actually, I think we had lunch one time over in Rio. And we had a great time, and he, you know, wonderful guy. I mean, everybody there is tremendous. So my regards to everyone there, and hopefully we can repeat it when Russia comes around. Hopefully,
anytime.
All right, man.
Anytime.
Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Really appreciate that, buddy.
All right, take care. Have a good one.